first off, I just have to say I'm so excited that there are so many people here. I was fully expecting more panelists than audience, so thank you. So I, again, am doing this. It looks like I'm a solo author. It's because this was my pilot study, but I wanted to acknowledge it's hard to see. I apologize. But the Wellness Network is actually the University of Texas at Austin's Campus Coalition. And so this has been in existence for about a decade or so, but about 5 years ago, we had a public health trained individual come into our university health services. And she has worked really hard to truly develop a campus coalition of faculty, staff, and students who are really working together to think about environmental level strategies to help out things from healthy dining to mental health. And I actually serve as the co-chair of the High-Risk Drinking Prevention Committee, so this work is based on that hat as my community-based work. Okay, so I have, bless you, I have no financial relationships to disclose. This was actually all done with the goodness of heart of everyone, so no finances whatsoever. Okay, so the purpose of this was to determine where our public tailgating is happening on and around campus. And so the reason this really started was part of our high-risk drinking prevention committee was sitting around and saying, okay, what do we need to tackle on our campus? Haha, tackle, football, tailgating. And so what students and staff kept saying was, well, we really need to look at tailgating. And so, of course, me as the researcher, I was like, well, where should we go? And they were like, well, I don't know. Students come into, you know, our alcohol and drug counseling, or, you know, they're coming in through fraternity and sorority life sanctions, and they're saying, oh, it happened at tailgating. But none of the campus providers knew where those high-risk areas were. And so the purpose of this was to do a pilot to say, can we actually go out there and figure out where our highest risk areas around campus are so that we can actually develop strategies for prevention? And so the first thing was just to figure out where's it going on, which is why I said, where's the party is the title, because we didn't even know where things were. But then also to just observe what's going on. And so all of the images are just from Google searching UT and tailgating. So these are not actually from our study. It is funny, I emailed this presentation to somebody from UT Athletics, and she let me know that she actually knows the gentleman in the middle with the helmet. So I told her to make sure that he knew that you can just Google search UT tailgating, and he shows up right there. But so we were really interested in seeing where alcohol was being consumed and also high-risk drinking behaviors. And this study was actually not deemed human subjects by our IRB because we did not ask any questions of anybody at the tailgates. Our goal was to be, if you were the alumni walking by with your two kids on the way to the game, what would you observe? And so this was really meant to be observation of what is going on in our campus. So what is tailgating? The official definition, you know, Wikipedia can tell you everything, is a tailgate party is a social event held on and around the open tailgate of a vehicle. It often involves consuming alcoholic beverages, and they are parties usually occurring in the parking lots of stadiums and arenas. So just a show of hands, how many of you have ever tailgated? Yay. Okay, so this is not news to you. What types of universities? I just want to hear you say universities. Shout it out.
University of South Carolina.
South Carolina. Illinois.
Maryland.
Arizona. Okay, so you guys are hitting like the top 25. So I didn't know if you knew this, but there is a Tailgaters magazine. And so, yes, there is. And they talk all about like how to set up a good tailgate, and they rank the top 25 schools. UT was only ranked 8th, which was kind of surprising to me, but so far all the ones you guys have mentioned are in the top 25. So I say that because you hear this and you're like, oh, an open tailgate of the vehicle, it's a couple people hanging out on the back of a truck. But I know these pictures are a little bit hard to see, but at UT, tailgating is a lifestyle, you know. So we've got huge parties, huge areas, and it's not, most of it is not on campus, which we'll be talking about as well. So it's a very complicated relationship that we have. So why tailgating? Again, you know, all these pictures are from our campus. So first off, we know that students drink more on game days than on non-game days. And we also know that tailgating students drink more compared with students who pregame but don't tailgate. So one of the things that people often ask me is, well, how does pregaming fall into this? And, you know, clearly the students who pregame and tailgate are the highest risk. But when you look at students who pregame, so they have a couple beers in an apartment and then walk their way over to the stadium versus tailgating, tailgating is higher risk. And then finally, we know from an environmental level, drinking is more likely to occur on a game day at schools where alcohol is allowed at the tailgates, which on our campus it is allowed. So there's no alcohol-free policy. Now, the important thing to note with all of these studies is it's based on retrospective. So the best research I've seen is that they interviewed students on Monday to ask them about what happened on Saturday, but there hasn't been any research actually going out and seeing, okay, well, what is happening in the moment? And so that was one of our goals, was to see, okay, even though we know students say they drink more, like, what's actually happening? And so, first, what I did was I took an area covering approximately 500 acres and divided it into 9 zones. And so, if this works, so this is based on our, so the UT camp, the football stadium is right here in the middle. And then all around here is the football parking map. So it tells you all of the parking lots that they suggest for people to go to. And so we are only 40 acres for the campus, so the campus is only this small area, but you can see there's tailgating areas all the way down here, there across the interstate, there's, you know, an area. And so what I did was I sat down and mapped out reasonable areas for our data collectors to walk around. And so then what we were able to do is say, okay, what was the drinking like in this zone compared to this zone? And so that was really the goal. So we didn't have GIS mapping, but this was kind of the next best thing to being able to do that. And so then I trained undergraduates to go out there. And so the training was about an hour and a half the Thursday before the game, provided pizza, that always helps. And a lot of the training was based on the data instrument that I had developed. And we walked through every single question. So we're asking about whether or not alcohol is visible. How could you tell if alcohol was visible? And made sure that all the undergrads had a similar definition, you know, so we made decisions. If it's a red solo cup and you don't see any non-alcoholic beverages, probably a good assumption that, you know, if it's a red solo cup with foam in it, probably a good assumption. And, you know, and so then also talking about visible drunkenness. How are we going to tell if somebody is drunk? And so really using that term visible drunkenness rather than actual drunkenness. And so when I present the rates of visible drunkenness, this is clearly the, you know, very tip of the pyramid. But, you know, we talked about things like really flushed face, you know, being a little too touchy-feely next to your neighbor, you know, talking really loud. And, you know, even things like you walk by a tailgate and there's one person who's kind of sitting off by themselves and everybody else is hanging out over here because they basically decided their friend is a little too far gone to even want to hang out with anymore. And so we talked through every single one of these definitions. And so then what we did, because I wanted to test the validity of the assessment, each observer completed these series of questions about each tailgate. So I sent them out in pairs, But each person in the pair looked at each tailgate. So then we were able to look at inter-rater reliability. And the inter-rater reliability overall was about 90%. It was very high for the measures we really cared about. Where it was a little bit lower was I asked them to estimate the percent female and, you know, the percent that were undergraduates versus, you know, children and, like, the percent racial ethnic distribution. And so most of the time when it wasn't reliable, it was within 5 to 10%. So it was still really pretty good. And then also had each observer record their overall thoughts about the designated zone. And so they wrote up about a 200-word, you know, qualitative summary when they came back to their apartment or dorm and told me, I was in zone A, and this was what it looked like to me. And so we were able to have both the quantitative and that qualitative data. And we purposely set a window of when data collection was going to occur, and we did that to make sure, okay, everybody's off in all these different zones. Some of them, you know, across the interstate, it could take you like 15, 20 minutes to walk to the stadium versus if you were in the parking lot that was right next to the stadium, you might continue to tailgate up to the last minute. And so we did pilot work through our high-risk drinking prevention committee, talking with students, and they said, you know, usually at a half an hour, people are starting to pack things up and go. And so, and then also asking at the end point, you know, anywhere earlier than 3 hours, you're really getting at your die-hard tailgaters. And so we wanted to make sure we were getting at, like, the peak of tailgating. So it was a two-hour time period from a half an hour to 2.5 hours before kickoff. Okay, so results. We were able to observe 206 individual tailgates, so a lot of individual tailgates. And so when we look at the numbers, again, this was the categories that I told them to look at. It was 5 or fewer people, 6 to 10 people, 11 to 20 people, then 21 to 50, and 50 or more. And we talked about why these categories were there. The thought was 6 to 10 people are your close friends. Once you start getting over that, you're like kind of inviting the friend of the friend. And then, of course, once you get to more, you are getting into these bigger parties. And we also talked about in the training strategies to be able to quickly count the number of people. And so we talked about, you know, chunking people by fives or by tens. And so, again, they weren't perfect, but it was trying to get at that idea of a small get-together. The five or fewer is, I think, what we traditionally think of as tailgating versus these big ones. And so what we see is that 54% were in that 6 to 20 range. So the majority of them were, like, slightly smaller. But I do want to point out that 15% of these tailgates had 50 or more people. So when we talk about tailgating being a business, there are a lot of corporations around our campus that set up corporate-sponsored tailgates. And so I instructed our data collectors not to pay any money to go into a tailgate in order to observe what was happening. But most of them, you know, if they had a fence at all, it was chain link, so they were able to at least look in and see what was going on. But, yeah, there are some big tailgates around. In terms of the distributions of demographics, predominantly they were alumni or older adults. And so, again, one of the things we talked about is how do you tell if somebody's an undergraduate versus an alumni? It made me feel really old because it turns out there are ways you can tell. but, you know, it turns out on our campus there is kind of this, like, traditional undergraduate dress for a game. And so they said, like, if people are wearing, you know, like, girls wear a white dress with cowboy boots, boys wear, you know, this. And so they had, like, these very specific ways that they could tell the difference of are these, you know, graduate students or older versus undergrads. Predominantly male, which isn't very surprising, and predominantly white. It is important to note when we talk about age, though, while they were majority alumni older adults, it was highly segregated by age. So we saw that 2 of the 9 tailgate zones were predominantly undergrads. So while they were a really small percentage, they all kind of hung out at the same place. Okay, so results. This is why you're here, right? So non-alcoholic beverages were observed at 84% of the tailgates, and part of the qualitative data is I asked them to record what that beverage was. The majority of them, it was water. And we did ask, I asked them specifically to note if they saw energy drinks, and there were a couple of tailgates, but it wasn't enough to be able to come up with a percentage. But, you know, majority was water. And the other thing we asked was whether or not the beverages or the food was communal versus non-communal. And we talked about, you know, so me showing up with my one water bottle, technically that means that water is visible, but that's non-communal water. And so in terms of thinking of prevention strategies, it's not just if food or non-alcoholic beverages are present, but if everybody can actually have them. And so the good thing was when non-alcoholic beverages were present, most of the time they were communal. Food was visible about 90% of the tailgates, and again, most of that food was communal. It was right around 85-90%. And then alcohol was visible at 95% of the tailgates. And also, most of the tailgates, alcohol was communal. The predominant alcohol was beer. There was a little bit of wine, not a lot of liquor. Definitely beer is the tailgating drink of choice. In terms of our high-risk behaviors, we looked at drinking games because we know if you're engaging in the drinking game, you're more likely to drink fast and not really pay attention to the amount you're consuming, but if you're winning the game. So drinking games were observed at about 9% of the tailgates, and only about 6% of the tailgates had someone that we would consider to be visibly drunk. But with both of these measures, it was dramatically higher at the tailgates that were predominantly undergrads. So drinking games, the odds ratio was, I had written it down, it is 7.4. So, you know, tailgates with undergrads, 7.4 odds ratio compared with that were not predominantly undergrads. And the visible drunkenness, the odds ratio was 6.7. So we're talking huge differences. Okay, so lots of limitations, as always. They were limited to public tailgating. So we did not go into fraternities and sororities. We did not go into tailgates that were considered private, like sponsored by other organizations. And again, this was in part because we're thinking towards prevention strategies. And while we're interested in knowing what's going on in those private locations, we aren't able to do anything about the tailgating there, so we're really focusing on the areas that we could actually implement policy in a way. The other thing that was interesting was, first off, data collection occurred later in the season, and so it was, the weather was nicer, you know, and we were losing really bad, so probably not as many people were there, and it was before an early afternoon kickoff. So it was not a night game, it was for a day game. So, you know, one of the things that we're doing this year is actually doing data collection before every game so that we can actually see how these numbers change across. I'm almost done, so we'll be good. The other thing is that the data collection was limited to observation, so we didn't ask anybody. So, you know, and I specifically coached our undergrads not to lurk at the tailgates. So the average amount of time was probably 3 to 4 minutes that they were hanging around a tailgate before they moved on. The other problem, though, was that they collected it via paper pencil instruments, so they were walking around with clipboards. So that's something we've corrected this year. They're now actually collecting it via their smartphone, and so the great thing is that they're still walking with a pair. They're now, each person is doing their own tailgate because we had such high reliability, but then they just look like typical undergrads standing next to each other texting, and, you know, they're able to do the data collection. And it was only an issue in one of the tailgate zones where it was two women who were in a predominantly undergraduate area, and it seemed like it was actually a way to kind of hit on them or have like a flirting thing, like, hey, what are you doing? And, you know, trying to look at their clipboards. So, but basically, alcohol has a huge presence at these football tailgate parties, and for our campus in particular, what this made us realize is that efforts to do some huge alcohol-free tailgating policy would be met with huge resistance. And the fact that 85% of our tailgates are alumni and older adults, that's just not a good thing. You know, the last thing you want is the Health Promotion Resource Center is to come out and try to set a policy that's going to be completely rejected. But we know that the high-risk drinking was really limited to specific tailgating areas around campus, which from a prevention standpoint is a good thing because we know that there are areas that we can actually target. So, 2 seconds. First off, like I said, we've expanded the study to look at how the context of the football season actually changes behaviors. And we are currently reaching out to vendors such as Uber and also our different campus partners like UT Athletics to determine how we could actually increase the presence of food and non-alcoholic beverages in these high-risk areas. So one of the things we're talking about is like distributing free water bottles and then having like, you know, big coolers. Food trucks are huge in Austin. So could we actually get some food trucks to come down and help supplement some of the cost of that so that it's good, cheap food that's nearby. So we're in the process of talking about that. And with that, I will say thank you so much. And let me know if you have any questions. Thanks.